You're listening to the Wine Country Live Morning Show with Barry Martin
on KVON Napa, 1440 AM at KVON.com.
In this next segment ahead, we're going to talk with a gentleman who is an expert on media and communications issues, and we're going to talk a little bit about disinformation and the problems we have knowing what to believe these days. And our guest is David Dozier, who is a professor at San Diego State University, professor emeritus, in fact. And Mr. Dozier, welcome to the show. Good to have you.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, our pleasure. Let's get right into it. Now that the election is over and a lot of things that some people believe were going to happen among the QAnon group in particular, now we can just turn the page and all of this fake news and made-up stuff and conspiracy stuff will fade away. True or false?
False. I think what we're looking at is a change in our information environment, and specifically the dependence on social media by about 20% of Americans for their news. And as you well know, the social media doesn't generate news. It doesn't collect it. It doesn't edit it. It just simply disseminates information from any possible source. And so that ends up being our Achilles heel.
Do you think people today actually understand what I would think of as the traditional journalistic practice, what people who go to journalism school and become reporters for major organizations, what they do to put a story together? Do you think Americans understand that these days?
No, I think what's happened is that now that everybody's a publisher, it's sort of amateur hour. And the things that journalists do, and I worked for a newspaper for several years before I became a college professor, and I remember that the most important thing was getting the facts right and checking with multiple sources. And folks that are basically passing along rumors, misinformation, which is, it's not true, but people think it's true. And then there's disinformation, which people know isn't true, but they're passing it along because it serves some, you know, some purpose. It might be satire. It might be to promote a product, but most often it's used to promote a particular political cause.
There was a study out not too long ago showing that the more outrageous, and I think it also showing the more false an item was, the more distribution it was getting on social media. Do you recall that study that I'm thinking of?
Yeah, I do. And it is interesting, you know, that an outrageous rumor that resonates with people will get a lot more clicks, you know, a lot more eyeballs than the actual truth. And very often the truth takes longer to, you know, to ferret out, takes effort to double check facts and get back to original sources and original documents. And if you're just making stuff up, it can go really fast. You don't have to spend a lot of time making sure that it's true because you know damn well it isn't.
So the only thing we have to explain our current dilemma is the different ways of spreading information, because that tendency to glom onto something sensational that was made up or sensational that had a kernel of truth but was mostly false, you know, that's human history. That's, you know, the Salem witch trials and, you know, Bigfoot in the 50s and 60s and everything else, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We've always had sensational journalism around, and there are some publications that, you know, built their reputation around sensationalism. You go through, you know, pre-COVID, you go through a line at the grocery store, and there it would be, you know, some outrageous thing that some Hollywood star has done to some other Hollywood star. So that's always been with us. But the ability of individuals to, in essence, become their own publishers and send out false information has created an environment where, rather than an hourglass where information goes through a team of professional gatekeepers, now we have a spider web where any point in the spider web information can generate and can fly in all directions. And that's the challenge. The solution is we need Americans to become digital and social media literate. There's some skills that we can acquire as citizens that will allow us to do a better job when we get information to figure out, well, is that true? Why do I think it's true? How can I verify that it's true? And what I like to say is, you know, this isn't North Korea. North Korea, you don't have to spend a lot of time carrying out the truth because it's not there anyway, state-owned media, and you don't have any power to influence the outcome anyway. But here we've got an awesome responsibility. We vote in governments and we vote out governments, and we do that based on what we know. And so what we know, what we take to be the truth, is something that we have to strive to understand and be much more discerning.
Could we spend a minute on some of those specific elements of media literacy? We're going to see a lot of talk about this, a lot of focus on it, civics and understanding things and how to be an intelligent consumer of information. What are some basic things that everybody should be doing?
Well, just initially, it's a much longer answer, and I think it's the thing we need to be teaching in kindergarten through 12th grade. It should be a general ed course at the college level. But here's some real quick things you can do. One thing is to check original sources. You know, if we remember in December, there was a lot of talk about the 25th Amendment and how you could basically take the president out of the presidency and how that worked. Well, you can go online and find out the 25th Amendment. It's not very long. You can actually read it for yourself. What I like to do is to triangulate on stuff. So if I read something in the, you know, New York Times, for instance, I like to go to the Washington Post, or which is a more conservative publication, or Reason Magazine, which is a libertarian publication, and get their take on it. And that way you can kind of triangulate on where that information is coming from. There are fact checkers on the internet, some of them, you know, coming from entities like the Washington Post, which is left of center. But there are also some independent ones that are just basically wanting to help people understand what's true and not true. And so when you hear or see something, you can go to one of the fact checker sites and check it out and see why it may or may not be true.
Mm-hmm. That's one thing that Barry has always been good about. I know with me, he's very adamant on get multiple different sources. And it's so true. I've, you know, come across something and then tried to fact check it from three different locations and couldn't find things. I went, well, that must be bogus. All right, mm-hmm. moving on.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, the phrase that I use all the time these days is that you can't unring the bell. And somebody shows up on a talking head show on one of the cable news networks. They make a statement that gets excerpted out and spread around. And the proving whether or not it was true is completely lost in that mix. It doesn't really matter at that point because the information has been released into the wild. Yeah.
Right. I think one of the things that we used to have in the old days was a clear distinction between hard news and commentary, opinion and editorial and analysis. And all of those had, you know, nuanced meanings. And it meant that you interpreted the information differently because it was being put in a format where opinions were allowed and encouraged, you know, like opinion editorial pieces versus hard news, where that was not considered appropriate. And that's all gotten blurred of late. We get information and we don't know if somebody is reporting a fact or reporting an opinion. And, you know, you repeat an opinion often enough, it takes on the status of a fact just by virtue of repetition.
Yeah, I think that we, you know, you look back, or I remember being a child and my dad turning on, Dan Rather or someone, you had the half an hour of news, and then it went to other programming. Now this constant stream of news and media networks needing to have this going 24/7, there's a lot more opinion and a lot more
trying to fill time.
Exactly.
And get ratings, which you know, and you can speak to this, David, as well, that there was a long period of time when it was understood that the news programs would lose money, you know, producing the CBS Evening News would lose money, but they didn't care because that was not the purpose of news division. It wasn't to make money, right?
Right, yeah. The movie network does a great job of discussing what happens when the news division gets made part of the entertainment division at a major network. And it's not only a very funny movie, but it's also very prescient because it really predicts what's happened over the last 20 or 30 years in terms of how media have transformed news into a form of entertainment. And you can see it on the, you know, evening news. I like to watch ABC, CBS, and NBC just to see what, you know, how they're portraying the events of the day. And, you know, a truck turns over on an interstate in somewhere in the Midwest, and all three networks have the picture of the same truck. And you go, wow, that's really not a national news story, but it's a good picture. It's a good picture.
And, of course, part of the reason for some of that type of coverage is newsrooms have been hollowed out. The newspaper industry is most profoundly affected, I think, but television and radio, it's much cheaper to cover the police blotter than it is to get into a Board of Supervisors meeting or a court case, right?
Right. Well, if your listeners want to take a deep dive into these issues, they might find some interest in my book, The California Killing Field. It's a novel, but it's basically concerned with the way fake news and information subsidies can be manipulated to affect public opinion and then affect the way people vote. Mm. And I try to do it in an entertaining manner.
That sounds really interesting. I may have to give that a read. We're talking with David Dozier. He is a public relations and communication management scholar, professor emeritus, School of Journalism and Media Studies at San Diego State, and is talking with us about the problems of fake news, of conspiracy thinking and conspiracy spreading that's going on. And clearly, you know, we let off the discussion. You mentioned social media right off the bat. That's what's different now than 10 years, 15, 20 years ago. What do you think could effectively be done? Is it going to be enough for antitrust suits to break up Facebook and Google and whatnot? Or do we need more of these panels of people evaluating, like Facebook says they're going to turn their decision about the president's Facebook account over to this independent review group? What are your thoughts about how we manage our new world with social media?
Well, it gets really complicated because historically, news organizations were privately owned, and as a consequence, they could do whatever they want, you know, with the exception of libel and, you know, invasion of privacy, clear and present danger and what have you. But they were basically private businesses, as is Twitter and Facebook. And but they're huge, you know, close to being monopolies now. So the antitrust thing is sort of separate from the free speech issue. I can see a lot of reasons for why that might be a good thing. But the real protection from misinformation on social media isn't going to come from the algorithms. It isn't going to come from a panel of experts deciding whether this source or that source is propagating false or misleading information. It really comes from helping the average citizen be just simply a better consumer of information. And so that wraps us right back to the idea of digital and social media literacy. We did a soundbite on it already, but there really are a number of things that people can do. And it doesn't have to be unpleasant. It's a game, you know. You hear something or you see something, you go, I wonder if that's true. And you get to be a detective. And it engages you in the news of the day, and it makes you so much more sophisticated. It's the difference between playing checkers and playing chess with the news.
I can't source the organization that first put it together, but I've seen a couple of different versions of this visual information, what's called a media bias chart, and I'm sure you're familiar with it. It lays out all of the familiar news organizations or aggregators and gatherers of news, and on a left to right spectrum, and it shows you who's generally in the middle. I'm sure you've seen that. What do you think of it? Is that a useful tool in this media literacy effort?
Well, I think that's part of it. I think one of the things that people need to do is to start to figure out whether a particular source of information is providing factual information. And I think we need to be real clear here that we're not talking about the opinions that we are going to hold as regards the facts, but just coming to a common agreement of what the facts of the situation are. And as the last, you know, the last 4 years have demonstrated, that's becoming increasingly difficult of just agreeing what are the basic facts. But you really can't have a democracy if you've got two camps committed to an alternative reality. We've got to find some common ground where at least we agree on the facts, what sense we make out of them and what we decide we want to do about them. Well, that falls in the range of opinions. And I think that that's certainly that ability to identify sources that are generally more accurate or less accurate in the information they provide and whether they have a clear political bias or not would be very helpful as part of an overall media literacy.
Yeah. Taylor's sick of hearing me go off on this rant, but I have to ask you about the demise of the fairness doctrine and the deregulation of broadcasting and how that started us on this path is in not just my theory, but I think a lot of people think so. Do you think that there's any value in having that conversation, and what can we do to reclaim some of that balance that existed because of the fairness doctrine?
Well, I agree. I think it was a sad decision and a sad evolution as we deregulated broadcast industry, which basically is, you know, operating on a public resource. The airwaves belong to the people, and as a consequence, when you run a television station or a radio station, you're using a scarce public resource, and so therefore you should use it in the public interest, and that means providing some kind of balance, which doesn't mean that you're the owner of your TV station or your network can't have a point of view. Certainly Fox News has a point of view that comes directly from the Murdoch family. But that shouldn't necessarily change how they cover the news and provide balanced coverage of the news. So I did hate to see it go. The argument was, well, with the proliferation of cable, now we've got all these extra channels, so it's no longer a scarce resource. But not everybody has cable. Lots of rural areas and certainly a lot of poor people don't have access to cable. And so our broadcast news, both on television and radio, are still essential lifelines for a lot of people. And I think that given that, I would like to see the fairness doctrine reinstated.
Hmm. Sign me up for that campaign. When there's a petition, I'll join you. We've been talking.
Yeah, it'd be just the two of us, I think. But
you got to start somewhere. David Dozier, you can find more about his books at daviddozierbooks.com. That's Dozier. He is, again, a professor at University of California, San Diego. And thanks for your time today. This is great information. Keep working on this media literacy subject. I think we can make some progress now that people are kind of coming to understand the danger of being, you know, misled. And it can lead you. A lot of these folks in QAnon are saying, I don't know what to think now. It's not turned out the way I thought it was going to. I don't know what to believe. So there's a moment here where people can sort of maybe zoom back in on reality, you think?
I agreed.
Yeah. All right. Mm-hmm. Thanks again for your time today. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me on your program.
You bet. Take care.
You're listening to the Wine Country Live Morning Show with Barry Martin
on KVON Napa, 1440 AM at KVON.com.